Good morning. I'm so glad to be here this morning. Y'all, I love it. The night before I ever speak, my brain is so kind to me. I will wake up about 10 times and will have dreamed everything that can go wrong. The PowerPoint didn't work. The lights went out. We had a wreck on the way here. My britches weren't zipped. All those things. My brain loves giving me those scenarios. It just loves just getting me as worked up and as nervous as I can be. Fortunately, I'm here. Everything is okay. I am wearing britches. All right? And we're all here. I'm glad to be here. I hope you are. And it's true what Mike said. Mike, thank you for leading those songs. He did come to me on Wednesday night and he said, I'm leading singing on Sunday morning. What do you want me to sing about? Is there any theme that you can think of? And I thought, wow. I don't know. That's not an easy one. And the initial reaction was, wow, no songs for that. I usually like to talk about cheery topics. Topics that make us grin and then just get us warm inside. This one, this morning, is kind of like that, except it's really not. So when Mike came to me and said, all right, what kind of songs do you want to lead? My immediate thought was, well, nothing in minor. Don't lead any minor songs. Don't lead any slow songs. Don't lead any sad songs. We need songs about hope and love and happy things. This morning I am talking about depression. Why do we need to talk about depression? Because honestly, I think it's one of the big problems the congregation faces today. Our church and everyone's congregation. It's a hidden problem too. It's not a normal problem. Like we all face issues with time and we're all busy and all those things. But this is one that's kind of taboo. It's one we don't talk about as much. So the first thing I want to do is talk about depression and get some biblical examples. I love the Bible in the sense that we always have an example of literally anything we need. It's almost like it's a two-edged sword and it's sharp enough to pierce even between the soul and the spirit. That's what it's here for. Depression is one of those topics that you don't easily bring out of the Bible unless you're studying a few areas and you can kind of gloss over it. But when you need it, it's right there and boy, it screams at you. All right, so let's get into some examples of depression this morning. Our first example is David. The different types of depression that we see in the Bible. There's different types of depression that we can face and reasons for it. David faced depression over fear and guilt. And I rearranged those, all right? But first thing we're going to talk about is how David faced depression and fear. Let's turn to Psalm 13. Turn to Psalm chapter 13. I'm going to read the whole psalm again. It's one of my favorites. Psalms 13, verses 1 through 6. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? And how long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all day? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? Consider and answer me, O Lord my God. Light up my eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death, and lest my enemies say, I have prevailed over him, and lest my foes rejoice because I'm shaken. But I've trusted in your steadfast love, and my heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord because he's dealt bountifully with me. The context of this psalm, I have it right there. The context, this is when David was being chased by Saul. David was one of Saul's beloved men until Saul realized, hey, he's my competition. Okay, so David likes playing music in front of Saul, and what does Saul do? Well, he throws a spear at him. Kind of shows that he didn't care for him too much. And Saul starts chasing him all over. David is being persecuted for no good reason. David is being, basically he's being followed, and Saul wants to kill him. And this is the psalm that David wrote in his sorrow and in his fear to reach out to God and ask, where's my help? And of course, he didn't speak evil. Towards the end, he realizes, no matter what's going on, I'm going to trust in you, God. But that's the fear he had. And I honestly think he was depressed at this time. Let's look at another one. 2 Samuel chapter 12. 2 Samuel chapter 12. We're going to read verses 14 through 20. Just bear with me and read along if you can. 14 through 20. Nevertheless, because of this deed, you have utterly scorned the Lord. The child who is born to you shall die. And then Nathan went to his house. All right, so let's get our context here. This is after David had sinned with Bathsheba, and she was going to have a child. All right, and David had gotten Uriah, her husband, killed in battle. Nathan the prophet comes to David and he says, look, you're not going to die. But because of this, that child is going to die. So let's pick up right here and we'll continue in verse 15. And the Lord afflicted the child that Uriah's wife bore to David, and he became sick. David therefore sought God on behalf of the child, and he fasted and he went and lay all night on the ground. And the elders of his house stood beside him to raise him from the ground, but he would not. And nor did he eat food with him. And on the seventh day the child died. And the servants of David were afraid to tell him the child was dead. And they said, behold, when the child was alive, we spoke to him and he didn't listen to us. How can we tell him the child's dead? He may do himself some harm. I'll go through verse 20. But when David saw that his servants were whispering together, David understood the child was dead. And David said to his servants, is the child dead? And they said, yes, he's dead. David at this moment, I love the fact that it says he laid on the ground all night. Y'all want to talk about sorrow? Y'all want to talk about depression and guilt? This is the perfect example of guilt right here. Why is David guilty? This is his fault. That child died as a direct and the only consequence and the only reason that child died was because of his sin. That's what David was facing at this time. I felt guilt, but I don't think I've ever felt guilt like that before. That's what David was dealing with. Y'all, no talk about depression would be complete without Job. So let's talk about Job for just a minute. If I did, y'all, somebody would just have to hit me because that'd be wrong. All right, Job. What did Job face? Job faced extreme sorrow. Let's go to Job 1. And I know all of y'all in Casey's class are just looking at me and say, well, we've covered this, we've covered it over and over. Y'all just bear with me, okay? We're in the other class and we haven't covered it, so I'm going to cover it. Job chapter 1, verses 13 through 19. Now there was a day when his sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. And there came a messenger to Job and said, the oxen were plowing and the donkeys were feeding beside him. And then the Sabaeans fell upon them and took them, and they struck down the servants with the edge of the sword. And I alone have come to save you. So Job lost his servants. And then while he was speaking, another came and said, the fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them. And I alone escaped to tell you. So more servants and his livestock. And then while that guy was speaking, another one came speaking and said, the Chaldeans formed three groups and made a raid on the camels and took and struck down the servants with the edge of the sword. And I alone have escaped to tell you. Well, boom, 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 right there. Your servants are gone. Your camels are gone. Your sheep are gone. Your donkeys are gone. And your oxen. Everything that you have and back then that you'd be considered rich for, gone. Immediately, now you have nothing. Let me pick up my place again. In verse 18, and while he was speaking, there came another and said, your sons and your daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. And behold, a great wind came across the wilderness and struck the house, and it fell upon the young people, and they are dead. And I alone have escaped to tell you. Guys, there's no greater example of sorrow, of things that can happen to us than Job. I'm talking about just one right after the other. Job went from waking up that morning, everything's great, grinning. He's lost just about everything. He's lost his family. He's lost his home. He's lost his livestock, all the things he considered rich, everything that people would look at and consider Job a great man for. It's gone. And unfortunately, it doesn't end there. Chapter 2, verse 7. Satan went out from the presence of the Lord, and he struck Job with loathsome sores from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. And he took a piece of broken pottery which to scrape himself with, and he sat in the ashes. And then his wife said to him, do you still hold fast your integrity? Curse God and die. So Satan goes to God and he says, look, I took all this stuff away from Job and it didn't do a thing, but I know what the problem is. The problem is he's still got health. All right, so if I take away his health, then everything's going to go bad for him. He's going to curse you, God. And of course, Job didn't, but he did lose his health. And now Job's in real rough shape. Y'all, you want to talk about sorrow? You want to talk about things that can happen to you that'll leave you in the dumps? I don't think anyone in this congregation has faced something like Job. We've all had our share of difficulty, but not like this. I'll tell you what, I don't know if I could act like Job in this situation. How did Job feel about this? Let's look at chapter 3, verses 1 through 7. After Job opened his mouth and he cursed the day of his birth. And Job said, let the day perish on which I was born, and the night that said a man that is conceived, let that day be darkness. And may God not seek it, and may nor light shine upon it, and let gloom and darkness claim it. Let clouds dwell upon it, and let the blackness of day terrify it. That night, let thick darkness seize it. Let it not rejoice among the days of the year, and not let it come into the number of months. Behold, let that night be barren, and let no joyful cry enter it. Job wishes he'd never been born. That's how bad it was. And I think some of us in this audience, I think myself, sometimes when things are real bad, it's like, man, why was I even born if things are going to be like this? I had no right to say that. especially compared to what Job's going through here. And finally, let's look at Job 7, verses 1 through 4. The book of Job is he and his friends going through everything that he's dealt with and why it may have happened and Job's defense. And I love chapter 7, verses 1 through 4. Has not a man a hard service on earth? And are not his days like the days of a hired hand? Like a slave who longs for the shadow and a hired hand who looks for his wages. So I'm allotted months of emptiness and nights of misery are appointed to me. When I lie down, I say, when shall I rise? But the night is long. And I'm full of tossing until the dawn. Job is not getting any sleep. This passage right here, we just see his misery. And I love the title of this, right above where it says chapter 7. It says, Job continues, my life has no hope. That's the theme of this chapter. That's what Job feels. You want to talk about depression? Well, Job is the best example of depression in the Bible. He has no more hope left. Everything's gone from him. There's one more example of depression that I want to cover. And not necessarily depression, but a reason for someone to be depressed. I don't think Paul was depressed, but I think he had reasons to be. How about his guilt and his suffering? What kind of guilt did Paul face? Well, I tell you what, if there was a passage in the Bible about me that said, will ravage the church, I would feel guilty. There's a passage about Paul in the Bible that says, and Paul was ravaging the church. That's what he was doing to the New Testament church. Paul killed Christians. Paul took the people that were following God's word and he murdered them. How about his suffering? Paul suffered in a lot of ways. I'm not talking about the shipwreck. I'm not necessarily talking about his persecution, although he did have a lot of persecution that he faced. How about a lot of the books he wrote? Where did he write them from? Well, he's in jail. He wasn't in a nice comfy chair. Or he wasn't in front of a laptop. He's in jail. How about his suffering and his thorn in the flesh? We don't really know what his thorn in the flesh is. There's a lot of speculation. But let's put it this way. He had ongoing issues, okay? I want to look at Acts chapter 9, verses 1 through 5. Acts chapter 9, verses 1 through 5. Y'all gonna get there before me. Just give me one sec. But Saul, still breathing threats and murder against the disciples of the Lord, he went to the high priest and he asked them for letters to the synagogues at Damascus, so that if he found any belonging to the way, men or women, he would bring them bound to Jerusalem. Now as he went on his way, he approached Damascus, and suddenly a light from heaven shone around him. And falling to the ground, he heard a voice saying to him, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? And he said, who are you, Lord? And he said, I am Jesus, whom you're persecuting. Rise and enter the city, and you'll be told what you were supposed to do. Y'all, Jesus himself told Paul that he was persecuting the church, that he was ravaging the church. You want to talk about having a reason to feel guilty? For me, that would be it. And we already explained his thorn in the flesh. Let's move on. Signs of depression. Okay, so we've looked in our Bible. We've seen examples of depression, okay? Let's talk about how that relates to us today. I want to talk about issues in the church, how depression manifests itself here at this building, here at other congregations, here in big groups. I want to get to the real brass tacks here, okay? So depression and what we see today. Unfortunately, there is no sackcloth and ashes. That's what happened in Job 1. After all these things had happened to Job and his servants, boom, 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 one came right after the other. Job ripped his clothes and he poured ashes over himself. And that was the sign back then showing that, hey, something's wrong. Don't come to me and shake my hand. Don't ask me what's going on because, can't you see? Something's going wrong, okay? Leave me alone. Even in, I guess, like a century ago or at Victorian times, if you were mourning, I think you'd wear some type of band around your arm. There were signs that people would know, hey, that person's mourning. Things are going on in their life. They're sad. They've either lost a loved one. Something's happening. We don't have that today. We don't have any outward sign that we have other than being absent or looking downtrodden. That's it. That's the only sign we have. So it's kind of tougher to see what's going on in people's lives. You have to know them. You have to talk to them to understand that. So what type of depression do we see today? We see sorrow. We see sorrow like David did. And we see sorrow like Job did. And it can be from physical death, from the loss of a loved one, mother, father, sister, brother, a good friend. It can be from spiritual death. I've been very depressed having lost people that I know to the faith. People turned away from God. That's actually very depressing to me, especially people that I look up to. That has an effect on me. It absolutely does. Another type of depression we see today is guilt. Guys, everybody in this audience would blush red. They have something in their life that they would blush if other people knew about. Every one of you. I would dare say that there's about 10% of the stuff that we do wrong is known amongst us. Okay? I confessed to y'all last lesson that I had trouble with bad language. Okay? Maybe that's just 10% of the things I have trouble with. How about y'all? In y'all's heads, do y'all know what you struggle with? How many people know that? I doubt less than 10%. And then embarrassment. I think this is one of the ways that Satan has us the most. And then when we can feel depressed, y'all, we get into a cycle of embarrassment. We can oftentimes get embarrassed because we're depressed, which leads us to being more depressed. It's a vicious cycle. That's what we see today. What about substance abuse? I think substance abuse is a problem in the church. And maybe not illegal substance abuse. I don't think anybody's down on the corner scoring illegal drugs. Maybe not. How about legal substance abuse? I tell you what, guys. Doctors don't always know what the best thing for you is. And they can prescribe you something that will leave you down in the dumps. And you can take a legal prescription and you can abuse that too. And you can be just as bad as anybody else that takes any other kind of drug. And you know why? Y'all, because, and let me back up and say this. I was reading online one time, and a guy jokingly asked, he said, I'm very depressed. How much alcohol do I need to drink to be able to overcome it? You know, he's kind of being a smart aleck. And the answer was kind of funny, but it was not, because it was so desperately true. The answer was more. How much alcohol do I need to get past my depression? More. How much Xanax and how much other drugs do I need to get past this depression, to get me out of the dumps? More. Y'all, it's an empty pit when you're trying to fill your depression with substances like that and nothing else. Another way we see depression manifest itself today is separation from God. How about being absent from church and life? I can talk about this subject, not only because it's in the Bible, and when we speak from the Bible, we have the right to talk about any subject in here. But I can also talk about it from personal experience. This is what I faced. I have been severely depressed before. I can get up in here and tell you that now. And there's a time where I was very ashamed and embarrassed about that. I'm still kind of ashamed about it. But I think it needs to be said. I was absent from church and life. That's how it manifested itself in my life. I was very elusive. I call it flying fish syndrome. And somebody else coined that term, but I love it. Flying fish syndrome. That means you show up every now and then, you're smiling, you're loving on people, you're grinning, you're shaking hands. It's just like, wow, it's so good to see that person. It's a flying fish right out of the water. And then for the next 3 months, that flying fish is back in the water and you have no idea where they went. They're there and it's great, and then they're gone for a long time. That's flying fish syndrome, and that's being elusive. I think that's how we separate ourselves from God, is by not being here. We've talked about the different ways now. Okay, we've talked about the different ways that we've separated ourselves from God. There's problems with substance abuse. We've talked about our sorrow, our guilt, and our embarrassment. I can't just end here, because then it's depressing. Okay, I even changed the background. Okay, it's not foggy and depressing anymore. We're coming into greener grass. We're coming into good things. Sarah picked these out for me, y'all. She told me my pictures were terrible, okay? If you don't like them, you can talk to Sarah, all right? Let's talk about overcoming depression. So first of all, this has to be said, what type of issue is depression? All right, is it spiritual or is it medical? It's both. All right, obviously the way God built our systems, we have enzymes and we have things in our head, and that's how our emotions work. I mean, our emotions and our thoughts, just electricity, actually, is what it is. So can we fix depression with medication? Yes. Can we fix it with medication alone? I don't think so. I had depression, and medication didn't help me at all. It didn't help at all. I fixed it with other things. I fixed it with being spiritual. So how? How do we overcome depression? Let's look at some real, real important ways. Okay, y'all, step one, we got to stop hiding it. Stop hiding depression. There is a stigma about depression where we're either ashamed to talk about it, or we're embarrassed to mention it, and we don't really want to ask the people if they're depressed. And y'all, let me tell you, when we don't talk about it, Satan wins. How many times in the New Testament do we see areas where Paul was talking to the church, hey, there's things going on in your congregation, and y'all are ignoring it. Pay attention. Y'all, this is the same way with depression. If we don't talk about it, Satan's won. It's over. We've got to get rid of the stigma. Everyone is depressed at some point in their lives. Everyone blows their nose, everyone showers, I hope, and everyone's going to be depressed. All right, it's real basic. It's just going to happen. We need to stop making excuses. Y'all, there are a couple of brilliant excuses that Satan gives us to get out of depression. I don't feel good. Okay, well, what does that mean? That means nothing. But here's why it's a brilliant excuse on behalf of Satan, okay? It's generic enough that you don't know how to address it. The people that want to help, they don't know how to address it. It's powerful enough for the depressed person that it gets people just to leave you alone. I don't feel good. Leave me alone. And when we use that excuse, we hide what the problem truly was. That was my excuse. I just don't feel good. I don't have a problem with me. And I was kind of ashamed to use that excuse. I didn't have cancer. I didn't have a legitimate problem. I gained some weight. All right, I mean, that's going to happen. All right, but I didn't have a real problem. But that was the excuse that was so easy to use. And there's other ones like that. Like, well, my stomach hurts and I just don't feel good, y'all. Those are excuses that get us nowhere. If you are depressed, say it. I am so down. I am depressed. I feel hopeless. I feel like all the light is gone from my life. I feel like I'm so separated from God. Those things are hard to say, but y'all, that's the truth. And once you have the truth, that's where the healing can begin. But so let's continue looking at how. We have to be honest, first of all. We have to release the stigma. We have to speak up about it. And then we have to renew our relationship with God. First of all, we have to study His Word. Y'all, like I said at the start of this lesson, everything we need is in this Bible right here. And it's so amazing how it shines exactly when we need it. I can read the exact same passage right now, and it mean one thing, and then I'll have a problem 20 years from now, and I'll get something else from the passage, and it'll be perfect. Read the Bible. You're not going to strengthen your relationship with God unless you're in His Word. Turn off the TV. Turn off the internet. Get off Facebook. Y'all, I'm telling you right now, there is not one person on this earth that has conquered their depression by watching TV. There's not one person that's conquered their depression by being on Facebook and looking at everybody else's happiness. I honestly think Facebook's one of the worst things for that. You know, you call it the highlight reel. You're looking at everybody else's happiness, and it's like, my life's terrible. I'm too fat for pictures. I thought that one time. I'm too fat for pictures. I'm not smiling in my pictures. Everybody's so happy. They're going on vacations. They're out with everybody. My life's terrible. Y'all, get off of Facebook. If you ever have that thought, turn the computer off. Just turn it off. Turn off the TV. Get into God's Word. Call someone. You're not going to get healed watching the TV. All right? It's never going to happen. Learn what you believe. For me, one of the points I hit in my life and what really got me depressed is I was brought up in the church and I hit a point where I was doing all these things and I had no idea why I was doing them. I mean, I can give you the answers. If you ask me, okay, well, why do you not have a gym? Why do you get baptized? I could give you the answers, but I never studied it for myself outside of a class. I never really thought, should we be baptized? When are we actually saved? I didn't have those answers. So that was missing in my life. I was so separated from what I thought I had believed. And y'all, you're never going to strengthen your relationship with God until you know what you believe. 2 Timothy 2, 24 through 26. Everyone turn there, please. 2 Timothy 2, verse 24 through 26. And the Lord's servant must not be quarrelsome, but kind to everyone, able to teach, patiently enduring evil, correcting his opponents with gentleness. Y'all, this is one of the passages I read, and it's one of the few I've got underlined in my Bible. Y'all can't see that, but I do have it underlined, trust me. Correcting his opponents with gentleness, able to teach. If I'm a servant of God, and I need to be correcting our opponents with gentleness, and I need to be able to teach, how can I do that if I don't know what I believe? Will Ogles, do you believe in baptism? Well, yeah. Well, why? I couldn't give you an answer. I couldn't have given you an answer. So did I really know what I believed? No, I didn't. I didn't. That was one of the reasons I was real upset. And that was one of the turnaround points in my life. So what are some other ways we overcome depression? We need to lean on our brothers and sisters. That's one of the reasons why we're here. We're here to worship God. We're here to admonish one another, exhort one another, and to build one another up in love. Y'all lean on your brothers and sisters. Y'all know Bob Waldron. I think most of you in the church know Bob Waldron. His wife, Sandra, that passed away. I was going to Eastside at the time. And it was when Miss Sandra had passed, or when Miss Sandra's mom had passed away, Miss Lee. Somebody was talking to her, and she said, you know what? During the time after her mom passed away, it was all she could do just to get through the doors of the church. She's one of the most righteous women I know of. She encouraged my mom and taught ladies classes and has wrote so many good things to help people understand the Bible. And even she had a moment in her life, she said, it was all I could do just to get through the doors of the church. But y'all, let me tell you, she did it. If you can just get through the doors, we're here for you. We're here for you. We're here to help you. We'll cry with you. We'll love on you. We'll talk about whatever you want to talk about. But you got to be here. And you got to let us know what's going on. And that's what Hebrews 10 tells us. To love one another and build one another up. You have to get rid of embarrassment to do that. Y'all, embarrassment is one of Satan's greatest tools. When you're embarrassed, he's got you. He's got you. And he's got you at home. And you're not going to get out. And you're not going to tell everybody what's going on. And he wins. Finally, how can you get over depression? What's the number one way? Well, excuse me, not finally. Seek professional help. There may be times where you need professional help. This can be a medical issue. Don't be ashamed to get professional help. Call someone and call anyone. If you're having extreme negative thoughts of self-harm, please call anyone. Call me. Call the elders. Call a hotline. Call anyone immediately. I think that needs to be said here, okay? I don't know if anyone's facing it at that level in this congregation, but if it's happening, call someone today, okay? And finally, how do we get over depression? Get out of the house, okay? This is where Satan's got you. When you're at home, he's got the home field advantage, man. You're losing. It's your home, but it's Satan's home. He's got the home field advantage. You're losing. What's the second way? Get out of the house. I'm going to reiterate it again. Don't think about it. Just do it. I don't care what you do. For me, there were times when I was real upset. I was real down. I just needed to get out of the house. Hey, go to the taco truck. I don't care. All right? Y'all, just get out in the sun. Get out of the house. And finally, the third point. Get out of the house. Okay? When you're down and you're at home, boy, you are in trouble. And nothing's going to help you at home. Nothing's going to help you at home. Lying in bed's not going to help you at home. Watching TV's not going to help you at home. Unless you're just sitting there studying God's Word all the time, it's not going to help you to be at home. I tell you what, go study God's Word at the duck park. Just get out of the house. Go see somebody. Have lunch. I know that sounds so simple, y'all. It just sounds so simple. Like, okay, really? A walk around the block's going to help me? Yeah. Oh, man. It really will. It really will. The last thing I want to talk about in this section is depression sin. I think at a certain point it is. I've been there, so I think I can say that. It's sin when you won't accept help. And it's sin when you won't help yourself. There's a comedian, I'm not going to tell you his name because he's a terribly immoral person, but he did have one good quote. He said he was broken down on the side of the road, and he said he's trying to flag people down, like, hey, I'm broken down, I need some help. He's flagging people down. Nobody's stopping for him. Nobody's helping him. I don't know why. I guess sometimes people think, well, that's just a scenario where you're going to get mugged or anything. Nobody's helping him. I don't know why. So he said he put his car in neutral, and he opened the door, and he held on the steering wheel, and he just started pushing it by himself. He just started pushing his car by himself. He's not really getting anywhere. And he said immediately, three other cars stopped, and men got out, and they all started helping him push his car. Just like that. Why? Because we can help people that will help themselves. Y'all, if you're hurting, you got to help yourself. You got to be willing to accept help. Is depression sin at a certain point? Yes. When we neglect our responsibilities, when we're not taking care of our family, like 2 Thessalonians says in 1 Timothy 5:8. And then Turn to Colossians chapter 3. Y'all beat me there again. I'm sorry. Colossians 3, verse 23 through 24. Whatever you do, work heartily, as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that the Lord will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ. Y'all, we're told to work hard, to work heartily. Okay? We can't do that. We can't do that if we're neglecting our responsibilities. All right, and I know I don't want to come up here and say, look, if you're depressed, you are in sin. Not at all. This is just at a certain point of your depression when you've been in it for so long and people have tried to help you over and over and just nothing's working. All right? Let's keep going. Is depression sin? Yes. When the attention's enjoyed, I think there's a certain point when it's like, I like having everybody ask me how I'm doing and coddling me and loving on me. That's not a good place to be. You shouldn't be enjoying the attention. Enjoy the love that people give you, but don't waller in the attention. When absenteeism is preferred, I think depression's sin when you just keep sitting there watching TV instead of going to church. If you can get up and sit on the couch, you can get up and put your britches on and make it to church and sit in a pew. Okay, it may not be as comfortable as a lazy boy, but you can sit here. Get up and get to church. Now, not every time you can do that, but make the effort. Y'all, I think once you stop making any effort, then I think depression is sin. Yeah, and okay, spoiler alert, I just said that, didn't I? Finally, lame excuses. I think when you keep offering up lame excuses like, well, I just don't feel good, I just got a lot of stuff going on, you're doing yourself a disservice, and you're doing your brothers and sisters a disservice. I did that. Y'all, this is when I went to Gooch Lane. There was a time where I went to church once a month. Once a month, I went to church. And I would offer up every lame excuse. And people would ask Sarah, what's really wrong with Will? You'll just have to talk to him. There was no answer. I didn't have cancer. I didn't have anything big. I just had lame excuses. The answer was, I was depressed. I felt separated from God. I felt like all I did was work and come home and see my family and sleep. And that was it. My life had no meaning outside of that. I was separated from my foundation. That's what the real answer was. And y'all, I know we're coming up against our time here. I apologize. Okay, for the non-depressed, if you're not depressed, good job. Great, great. Everybody in this audience may not be depressed. That's great to hear. How can you help? Okay, forcefully if necessary. Brother Frank Walton at Gooch Lane, he was a preacher at the time. He knew I was depressed. He would just show up. You know what I mean? There's times where I'm just in my pajamas. He would call and ask, can I come over and sit with you? I'd say, no. Work on somebody else. Focus on somebody else. Leave me alone. I don't want the attention. It got to the point where he would just show up and he'd knock on the door and he'd say, I'm here. We're going to read a couple Psalms and then I'll go. You know, he did that about 6 times. That was so helpful. So how can you get involved? Sometimes you got to be forcefully involved. People that are depressed, they're not going to come to you and they're not going to say, hey, can you come over? I'm depressed. That's part of the disease. That's part of the issue. They're not strong enough to do that. So you have to get in there and do that. If you're not depressed, great. You've got strength. They don't. Go help them. Share your love. Share your strength. And that passage right there, that's how Job's friends, that's what they did for him. Job's friends, they came to him. They saw that he was sorrowful. All 3 of his friends, they came there. They ripped their clothes. They showed their physical signs of mourning. How many days did they sit there and not talk to him? 7 days. All they did was sit with him. They didn't call Job up and say, hey, is it cool if we come and sit with you? I know. No, they just went there. They didn't say a word. They didn't bother him. They just let him know they were there. That's what you got to do if you're not depressed. There's people that are hurting and we need to help them. You need to reach out. We need to talk to one another and we need to pray for one another. I'll let y'all write that down. Okay, let's keep going. My final point is there is hope. I don't want to end this lesson on such a negative tone. Y'all, there is such hope. You can get past depression. If Job can get past depression, y'all can. Have y'all seen the sins that David made? What did God call David? A man after his own heart. Y'all, if these people can get past the pain and suffering in their life, so can we. You want to talk about suffering? Peter was crucified upside down. That's some suffering right there. It pales in comparison, or my issues pale in comparison to that. There is hope. There's hope through God. There's no amount of guilt that is too much for us. I love Psalm 13, and I love towards the end of that psalm, y'all, it looks so dire for David. He could be killed by Saul, but David trusts in him, and he says, verse 5, I've trusted in your steadfast love. My heart's going to rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord because he dealt bountifully with me. No matter what David got into, God still took care of him. There is hope. There's no sorrow too deep. In 2 Corinthians, I'm going to turn there. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 17 through 18. For this light momentary affliction is preparing us for an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison, as we look not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen. For the things that are seen are transient, but the things that are unseen are eternal. All the stuff we have going on in our lives, all these problems, it's nothing. It's nothing compared to the goodness and the glory that's to come. If we can just hang on, and if we can just stay focused, y'all, there is hope. And there's no separation too wide. There is no point in our lives where we're totally separated from God and we cannot come back to Him. Romans 8, verse 38. For I'm sure that neither death nor life, nor angels nor rulers, things nor things present, nor things to come, nor powers, no height or depth, nor anything else in all creation, will be able to separate us from the love of God in Jesus Christ our Lord. Nothing can separate us from the love of God if we will let it. If we won't let it separate us. That's up to us. Finally, we can overcome anything. I was going to read all of Psalm 46. I want to encourage you to do that. That's your homework. People do the sermon, give homework. I don't know. That's your homework. Write it down. Write it on your hand. I don't care. Read Psalms 46 this afternoon. Please. Please read Psalms 46. It's one of my favorites. And it's one that really, really helped me. Okay. Finally, we need to offer up an invitation. What's the invitation about? If you don't have the foundation with God, answer me this. Where's your hope? That's what happened in my life, y'all, is I lost my foundation. I had no hope. I had good things, and things were just kind of like they were today. I had a good job. I had a great family. Things are going well. But I had no hope. Everything lost its meaning. If you're not a member, if you've not been added to the flock, where's your hope? Where's your hope? And y'all, let me tell you, if there's something you need to confess, if you've fallen away, if you're having difficulties, your hope could be in jeopardy. Please fix that. Please go back and fix your foundation. Make it solid again. We're here for you. And most importantly, God's here for you. Please think about these things. Let's stand and sing.
Now to come into the fold of